Blog Talk Radio.
From the battle for American independence to the current war for the U.S. soul, and broadcasting from a small, cramped, dingy, but stunningly patriotic converted golf shack, Kelly O'Connell, 606, July 3rd, I am the only broadcaster in the building right now. Everybody else is doing recorded programs on their show. So glad to be here. 523-1450 to call in. 805-6180 to text. Although I got to go hunt down my text machine now. But if you're listening in, thanks for joining me on a day that you undoubtedly could have slept in, unless you're a cop or a doctor or something like that. I've got Steve Pierce coming in at 6:30, and we should have him for an hour. Before that, don't see a whole lot going on. Do not see a whole lot going on for the state, locally, whatever. It smelled like rain when I got up this morning, but I didn't see any water on the ground, so I don't know exactly what the... It just, I don't know, it just kind of seemed like it was going to rain when I looked up, but at the same time, you never know around here. But it did have that kind of ozone smell in the air. 4th of July, and I'm looking at the national forecast. You've got the same kind of string of thunderstorms that goes from down by Louisiana all the way almost up to Maine. And so it's kind of the center of the country. It's just been getting pounded for weeks and weeks. So yeah, I'm just looking at this article on the Weather Channel. Scientists, it's changing in unprecedented, abnormal ways. That's the weather. Now, I don't know what the real claim is, but undoubtedly it's tied into some statement about global warming, of course. But this is a day to recall when we fought for and won and declared our own independence and our freedom from tyranny. And now we're under a tyrannical hand again, only the tyranny isn't a foreign government. It's our own home government. And we're being led by people of radical inclination. And our elected officials are not standing up for us, and it's a terrible time to see the history of America get trashed. It's heartbreaking to see government officials and people that are elected to represent us. I was talking to Steve Pierce's assistant, Tom Iruccio, whatever. I said, if this was a business, if America was a business, it would be obvious that the people who are running it would either be increasing or decreasing the worth of the company. Instead, it's a nation. The nation's history, its image, its mission is being trashed, and so it's getting downsized. That's my take on everything. That's my take on what's happening to the country. We're being downsized abroad. We're being downsized nationally, and no one is standing up for the country, or the people that are standing up for the country are either not very competent or they're overwhelmed. And it's just terrible to see it's like watching a business go through some sort of a terrible crisis in which the business comes out at the other end a laughing stock. So anyway, but I've got some weather here for you. Just the 4th of July weekend. That's the overall weather, and I'll get you more local weather after the next break. But anyway, just a feeling like the feeling in the air for me is everything's getting ruined, and there's not going to be anything to come back to in 10 or 20 years. We have a call. Thanks for the call, the Kelly Connors Show. Who's this?
Who's Kara?
Hey, Kara, what's up? Good morning.
Yeah, I agree with you. It's sad because freedom was won with the blood of a million people so we could be free. And we're the land of the free and the home of the brave. We've turned into the land of the fearful and weak and oppressed.
Well, who's going to stand up for, who's going to be charitable and give to people around the world? Who's going to stand up for the oppressed like we did in World War I and World War II and try to fight against fascism, Nazism? you know, who is going to, I mean, you can trash the country and get rid of our nation. Who's going to take over?
I don't know. It's a mystery, but the world is getting more united, and America is not the only one that's helping these people. It's nice to see, because I see a lot of the United Nations, a lot of countries are working together now instead of just our country doing it.
A lot of countries are trying to work together. Kara, do you put your faith in the United Nations?
I do put my faith in the United Nations. I put my faith also in my country, in my state, in my city, in my block, in my neighborhood.
Let me ask you, Kara, what does America stand for today?
It stands for the handout, do what they say, don't say this, don't do that, believe this, believe that, think. We need to think independently, and it only takes one individual to change the world. Nelson Mandela did it for in prison. A lot of people have done it, but one independent person standing up for themselves can change the ways of the world. And I just hope that we don't get too forgetful of what freedom was, because it's not a gift. It was fought for, and you got to fight for freedom. We need to pay attention to our homeland so we can help ourselves, and then hopefully the whole world is working on this instead of just America running around trying to be a number rescue for everything, and we're forgetting our homeland.
If you think that the whole world is turning into America, I think you're sadly mistaken.
I don't. I think there's diversity, and America is the one country in the world where we can do all these different things from all over the world in this one country. If you want, like, one socialistic thing, or what, there's places all over the world for one thing, and America is supposed to be the place where you can have all those things in one place. Freedom. And that's what we're supposed to be, the land of opportunity and land to be what you want to be.
That's
and,
true.
So many of us are trying to be the same thing or whatever.
Well,
they're to be different.
Huh. I'm just worried about the country surviving. But anyway, did you
Me
have...
Too. Me too. That's what I said, right to my neighborhood, to my county, to my state, to my country. But I work from the neighborhood on up, from the people around me,
well,
the backyard.
Kara, happy 4th of July. Thanks for the call, and have a wonderful weekend.
You too.
Thank you.
You
bye-bye.
Too, honey.
All right, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
All right, folks. All right, here's a little bit of – you know what? I don't even feel like arguing today. Not that Kara called up to argue, but I just kind of – I feel a little sense of mourning for what's happened to my country. And there's so many lies out there that have been spread about the country. But here's a little clip, a brief history of America's independence. All right, so that's a little bit of background for the beginning of the war. And then, of course, America was so overwhelmed in terms of fighting. Well, you could imagine, you know, that would be like Guam standing up to America right now, the world's number one power. And but it was either, I guess it was either a miracle or it was, if you're Frankie, it was an accident, but. But there was some mistakes made, but, you know, there was an indomitable will in America and a real sense of aggrievement and injustice. And the Americans basically said, you know, we don't want to be have our rights taken away. And I just wonder, where are the people today in America that are thinking about their rights, what rights mean, and that type of thing? I've got a little bit of Carrie Underwood here, National Anthem. And it is 6:18. We got Steve Pierce coming in, but we're going to talk a little bit about American history. And this great, can you imagine the world without America? I mean, wow. Anyway, 6:18. On the 3rd of July, Kelly O'Connell Show, coming live, 523-1450 to call in, and we will be right back. Hey, it's Kelly.
Yeah, am I on?
Hello, it's who?
Pardon me?
Who is this?
Oh, am I on air?
No, but who is this?
Oh, name is Robert.
Robert, how you doing today?
Okay.
Did you want to say something on the air?
Yeah, I did. I just wanted to A little earlier, you said it's hard to imagine the world without America or something to that effect.
Yeah.
I would like to imagine America without slavery, which goes back to the early 1600s.
Okay. Robert, can I put you on hold? I got to go grab my I have a phone that I use for texting. I left it in the car. Can I put you on hold? We'll be back on the air in just a minute.
Okay.
Thank you. Just hold on, and I'll come back when you'll be on the air, okay?
Okay.
Thank you. Robert, we're almost on the air.
Okay.
Here we go. Hold on a second. Six twenty-three, and just to let you know, it is raining. I went out to get my phone, and it is raining out there. And I just got a text from somebody who said that, and we do have a call, by the way, Robert. About 10 minutes ago, it rained up along Del Rey, a couple miles north of 70. All right. So anyway, we've got a call from Robert, and Robert is calling to say that he wishes that in the history of America there was no slavery. Robert, go ahead.
Well, a little earlier in the show, you said that it's hard to imagine the world without America, but I'd like to imagine the world with America and with no slavery. The first slaves were brought to America in the early 1600s to Jamestown, and that was the beginning of a very, very dark history, dark time in American history.
Well, Robert, let me ask you something. What percentage of people do you think would be proud of the history of slavery in America?
The people who identified themselves with the Confederacy, mostly.
Well, probably not. I mean, probably if you talk to most people who were pro-Confederacy, probably most of them would admit that, probably the vast majority of them would admit that slavery is not a very nice thing to do to other people.
I don't agree. I think that they believe wholeheartedly in slavery. I think they love slavery. Why not? It's free labor. All they had to do is give them a shack and leftover food to eat.
Robert,
no pay.
Robert, I understand how the basic economy of slavery, but I mean people today, not people who are living during the Civil War. You think that the people in the South still would like to have slaves back?
Oh, no, I think most people in the South today are much more enlightened. They find slavery unacceptable.
Of course, yeah. Let me ask you this. Do you think that of the history of America would be radically different if we had never had slaves?
Yes, I do.
What do you think it would be like?
There would have been no Civil War, for one thing.
Mm-hmm. What else?
Well, slavery was an institution that had a great impact on American history and our image in the world.
Of course. But, you know,
negative.
Well, we weren't the only country that had slaves at the time. Of course, the British Empire had them. And,
no, but when we're tooting our horn all the time about what a great country we are.
Let me ask you this,
Robert. We need
to
remember about how
Robert,
a lot of slavery has been going on here.
Robert, I understand there was slavery here. Can you point to me the country that has a clean history, that didn't make mistakes, that didn't have some sort of moral issues?
No, but we have to accept the fact that slavery was a horrible
crime against
humanity.
Robert, you've already stated that most people, even in the South today, would admit that it was a mistake. So do you think that at every national celebration, we should spend our time talking about the horrors of slavery?
No, but I think we should be more upfront about it. And when we're praising America, remember the way that we treated black people and Native Americans and Hispanics and even Asiatics at a time.
Robert, I guess I have a reaction here. I feel like that your attitude, while it, what you're saying is true, is really what's wrong to some extent with the country right now, looking at the past, looking at all of our mistakes, chastising ourselves, going around and trying to get other people to admit what a terrible history America's had.
I didn't say that.
Well, that's honestly, right now, that's what I'm kind of feeling from you. It's not just slavery. It's all the racism against all the different people. Let me finish. I've listened to you. I feel like within the seeds of what you're saying is a real sense of beating America down and pointing out that we're no better than anybody else. To me, that leads to the idea that America couldn't be better, couldn't lead the way, couldn't help out other nations. You know, I would disagree with that. Every single country, hold on, Robert, let me finish. Every single country in history has had darkness in the past, has had evil things that have happened. If that is your point, then all you would ever do is go around. If you went to France and you would talk to French about the Jacques and the Dreyfus affair, you would go to Britain and talk down to them. You'd go to the Irish. You'd go to every single country and talk down to them and denigrate them for the mistakes of the past. Is that really what we should be up to today?
Well, I think you're exaggerating what I said.
Not at all.
I didn't say we ought to damn ourselves to perdition because we had slavery. I think we just need to be more upfront and honest.
We talk about Robert, we talk about this all the time. Name another country that had a civil war in which 650,000 people died in which to get rid of slavery. Name another country that did that.
I'm not calling
about
another country.
No, I'm just asking you to be fair. I'm just asking you to be Robert.
And I'm talking about the fact that we're far from perfect.
Robert, nobody is saying that we're perfect. I didn't get on the air and say that we're perfect. I didn't say
we like to make out like we are.
I'm going to pull down your mic here. I'm not getting up here saying America has done everything right and nothing wrong. But your attitude, to me, is exactly the problem here. This is what I hear from this administration all the time. We're bad people because we once held slaves 150 years ago.
Really what they're saying. I'm saying they're just,
well, what's your point,
admitting,
Robert?
To a dark part,
Robert,
of our history. That's,
yeah,
all.
I understand that, but is that what we spend all, well, I don't see how you have a successful undertake. I'm calling if you think that I'm wrong, 523-1450, 805-6180, if you think that Robert isn't correct in this. My point is that let's go forward. We've already corrected slavery. There's never going to be a country, in your opinion, is there a country with no racism? With no bias?
Again, you're trying to divert the.
I'm not trying to divert it, Robert. I think this is exactly the kind of thing.
America,
you're not going to talk over me, especially in that monotone voice. You sound like you're running a place where they do embalming. I am. What I'm saying to you is, to me, you're in my opinion, Robert. You're engaging in exactly the kind of thing that is coming out of D.C. at the highest levels to try to beat Americans down and take away our spirit and get us to admit that we've got some shameful deeds. Every country has shameful deeds in its past. That's not what the summary of America is, but it is the one thing that you wanted people to remember today when I don't think people have ever forgotten slavery.
Want people to think that America is the greatest country in the world. And that we're practically
who's the
always
better country?
Been perfect. And
Robert,
that's not
who's
the
better country?
All.
You're an anti-American, in my opinion. Who's the better country?
No, I'm not an anti-American.
I think you are.
I think America's.
I think
made
you're anti-American, Robert. I think you can't wait, Robert. You can't. With your Undertaker's voice, you're not going to talk over me.
It would be a much worse place.
You want people to remember not just the sins of the past. You want us to live in the sins of the past and. Shamefulness.
That's not true. Folks,
you're
exaggerating.
Take a break. I got Steve Pierce here. We'll be right back.
Join together and support the first annual Mesquite Valley.
Robert, hold on.
Hi, Kelly, it's Carol. One more time, I won't bother you anymore, but in this country, we have the freedom to make mistakes. Every invention and discovery was made by a series of mistakes.
Yeah, but
and we need to quit living in the past and learn from our mistakes and work on what we can do in our future.
Yeah,
I get frustrated with everybody living in the Civil War.
It's like somebody brings out, you stole an ice cream when you're six, and every time you go to back to the family reunion, everybody brings that up. What's the point?
Yeah, and I was a teacher, and what did you learn from your mistake? And then what? You discovered radiation. But yeah, we have the freedom to try different things and make mistakes. And a slave to his past, I guess so, because we have the freedom to have a future here and learn from our mistakes. And that's one thing a lot of other countries don't have, is the freedom to try to do different things and make mistakes. They're told what to do.
I hope that guy isn't a 911.
But anyway, let's send him to Arabia for a minute, and then he can realize how good we have it here and how lazy we are.
Kara, I got to go. Anyway. Thank you.
Just to hear that somebody call, I don't mind somebody bringing up slavery, but like to point out that we're not that good. We've made mistakes.
I think that was better. I don't know if that was good.
It's Kelly here, and we do have Steve Pierce. And Steve, I just did some hand-to-hand combat with a guy talking about slavery. But anyway, it's
for it, against it.
Well, he wants us to remember and not forget that we were once slaveholders in this country.
Hey, we ought to remember that we're right now enslaved to drugs, to money, to everything else. I mean, we got a lot of present sins to remember before we remember the past.
Well, doesn't the fact that we sacrificed 650,000 people mean anything?
Yeah, the fact that we did fight to free the slaves.
We've got a phone call here. Thanks for the call to the Kelly Connor Show. Who's this?
Good morning, Kelly. This is Takashi speaking.
Hey, Takashi, how's it going?
Yeah, I want to help our Robert here for a second. I believe he is referring to the fact that the globe-trotting telling other.
Well, it sounds like we lost Takashi. Okay, folks. Well, anyway, I got a special guest in the studio, always a special guest, Steve Pierce. Thanks for calling in or coming in, and it's always great to have you in, but especially right before the 4th.
Yeah, we're getting rain. Usually we don't get it till tonight, but we're looking forward to the Electric Light Parade tonight.
Congratulations for getting kicked off a committee for standing up for your convictions. And I that put a big smile on my face because it's like you in this government, you don't get kicked off committees or sent packing on something like that unless you've stood up for something profound.
They came in after that and said, by the way, if you do that again, we're going to do this, this, this. And I said, you might as well get the paperwork ready because I'm not going to change just because you threaten to do this and that. So the fight's not finished. In fact, the fight is raging on. It just didn't get attention because it happened Friday.
Could you give a little background so people know? I mean, it was this international trade.
Yeah, the TPA, that gives the president the ability to fast-track or negotiate trade treaties. People, I mean, it was very confusing stuff. You get the TPP, the TPA, the TAA. So the TPA is required for the president to do the TPP. That's the Trans-Pacific Partnership, and I believe in free trade. 96% of the consumers live outside the U.S., but I also think it's got to be fair trade, and we can't just load the dice up in favor of other countries and give them everything they want. So I want to be able to inspect what the president does. We don't really, in the House of Representatives, have a voice. We get to vote up or down at the last deal, but I want to impact the negotiations. We ran into that with President Bush. Australian Free Trade Pact had things that were very dangerous for New Mexico, hurtful to our economy. I got to talk to him personally. He made some notes, pulled them out. The dairy people called later and said, hey, thanks, you changed those deals. So that's what we wanted, and we don't have it in this. So the TPA, the agreement to negotiate trade, was flawed. But that wasn't the vote that got me in trouble. I voted against it, but the vote that got me in trouble was the procedural rule, which brings it to the floor, which basically says we're going to debate this long, we're going to allow these amendments. They would not allow conservative amendments because we wanted to change that touch point. We should be able to touch the trade treaties before the last day. And so we wanted that. They gave Nancy Pelosi her amendments, but not ours. But the offensive thing was that they split it into three parts, the Senate bill into three parts, and we voted on three separate things but never voted on the total package. That way you could vote for one piece and vote against the other piece and go home and tell your constituents, I didn't vote for that piece. Look, here's my no vote. Well, the rules of construction, just the parliamentary procedures declare that the bill that passes the House and the Senate's got to be exactly the same. We never voted for exactly the same. We just, in that rule, said after we vote for the three separate parts, we're going to roll them together and declare that we voted for them. Well, we complain as Republicans a lot when the Democrats did that on Obamacare. But now here we were doing it. And I just told leadership five different times, please don't put me in the position. I'll vote against that rule because it's deceptive. It's not true to the American public. I can't go home and look people in the face and tell them, we deemed that we voted for a bill we didn't vote for. We either vote for it or we don't.
And well, here's the thing. To hear Nancy Pelosi stand up and say, we got to vote for this and then find out what's in it, which is just an insane model yeah. for legislation. And then hear that our former vice presidential candidate did the same thing, and then he acts all butthurt when people criticize it. Steve, where is this government headed?
It's headed into bigger and bigger power, concentrated in a bigger Washington, more bureaucrats, more people, regardless of party, buying into the same big government ideas. Our freedoms will continue to dissipate, and that's just not a track that I want to be on. And fortunately, that was only about eight of us 2 or 3 years ago when I voted against the speaker. There were very few of us willing to stand up. 34 of us voted against this rule. That's the reason the speaker is responding pretty strongly.
But he's lashing out.
He's lashing out, which always causes you problems. So it went without attention. But Friday before we left, so we're on the House floor, he kicked us off the whip team. But then later, he took a chairman off of committee, and he was also had on track to unelect or take out the president of the freshman class. Just a symbolic position.
Who is that?
I don't even remember myself. A guy named Ken Buck. Okay, so Ken Buck was going to be removed, but also Mark Meadows was taken out as subcommittee chairman. Well, quietly on Friday, I think it was 15 of the 25 members of the committee, underneath the committee chairman, who had been instructed by Boehner to remove the subcommittee chairman, reinstated him. In other words, they have the right to do that. The speaker had not followed the rules. So that was a pretty good slap in the face. But then the freshman class, and freshmen are extraordinarily, I mean, you can imagine.
Yeah.
You're sitting here on the street 1 week, and the next week you're up with John Boehner sitting there in the room with you, and he's acknowledging you by name. That's pretty powerful stuff. So freshmen really don't want to make waves. And yet the speaker ran a candidate trying to displace this freshman class president who voted like I did, and they failed. And so two major slaps in the face to the speaker last week.
Okay, so at what point do we get the sense of a insurgence within the GOP that actually stands for conservative values?
I think you've got it going right now. It began 3 or 4 years ago. I was one of four at one point, then one of eight. Now it's 34. And after the retaliations, then people begin to come and say, you know, I really should have been with y'all. And so I think that this is fully engaged now. The speaker is upping the stakes. They came and said to me that we'll kick you off the committee if you do that again. I said, prepare the paperwork, because you come back with that kind of stuff, I'll vote again that way. So I think it's fully engaged right at this point.
When you have these conversations, are they with a smile?
Yeah, sure. I'm from my side, they don't smile.
I mean,
it's all friendly, but
people pulling you into side rooms and saying,
exactly.
"Who do you think you are, Pierce?"
Yes, basically. And so, I think the conversation about being kicked off the committee was, we're just not sure that being a part of this group that votes this way will be conducive to serving on the Financial Services Committee. I said, "Well, if you want me to hand you my voting card, that's not going to happen." "Well, you're part of a team." I said, "No, I'm not part of a team. I run as a Republican, proudly. I come up here and serve as an American, proudly, and I represent the people in my district. so that played out. And so they said, well, but you work for us. And I said, no, I work for the people back in New Mexico. And I said, actually, the speaker works for us. We elect the speaker. You work for the people that elect you. So I said, I think y'all got this stuff upside down. So those discussions are continuing. And like I said, the day that they kicked the three off the whip team, they thought people would start folding and this kind of, you know, this hard rock of contention might start dissipating, and it didn't. So then they removed the subcommittee chairman, and they thought that this movement would dissipate, and instead it seemed to get stronger, which is always what happens when you're in a fight and you get whacked in the face. You stand up and start fighting back.
Yeah, you got to have something to fight back against. So, Steve, in your mind, what are the elemental things that you're standing up for, the principles that you're not going to back down over?
Liberty and truth.
Could you embellish a little bit?
Well, truth, whatever we say that we're doing, we should be doing. And so that was my point with that rule, that procedural vote, that it's deceptive. It tells the American public that we voted on this bill and that it passed. We didn't. We voted on three separate pieces, and each one of the separate pieces then were added together, but that makes them a much different product. And I said, so, and not the same. Democrats helped pass one piece, Republicans helped pass a different piece, and then kind of a mixture of the third piece, but it would not have stood the test if everybody had to vote on the whole package, and that was the deception. So truth is there. Liberty, every day that see government getting bigger, then we see liberty dissipating, and that's kind of the major fight. Yesterday I was in about an hour and a half meeting with the Forest Service talking about those things that where they're kicking people off their private property. If the Forest Service can kick a rancher off his private property, the IRS can come and kick you out of your house. And so every day I stand up for liberty because I think the government's too strong, too powerful. We're engaged in a really hard case right now where the local State Department, state tax department was going to come in and confiscate everything that this guy and his wife had earned in their life. He had a letter where 5 years before they said he could that he was doing it properly, and then they're going to come take everything, and weren't even willing to talk to him. So we've been engaged in about a 10-day discussion. I got on the phone personally a couple of times saying, you know, we're after truth and justice. We want to be treated fairly. I don't care what – I mean, I know what the law is, but make sure you're treating this guy the way the law says. So,
It seems like some of these administrative agencies are more powerful than senators and congressmen.
Much more powerful, because they simply hunker down. They're like a turtle. They pull into the shell, and they wait for your two-year term or your interest in an issue to dissipate. That's the really hard thing, is that there are so many issues that you take on these fights, and it's very difficult to stay focused on this fight today, tomorrow, and the next day. And so when I went into the Forest Service, I think they were aghast that I could quote by memory things that had happened out in this fire and the next fire and the next fire. I told them, and they said, well, which staffer do you want us to work with? And I said, you don't work with a staffer. You work with me, because I'm the one that has this stuff in my head and my heart. I'm the one that gets to stand up and explain when houses are being burned by the forest fires that you caused. Then I get to explain it. And so we're going to have that discussion with me, not my staff.
Okay, we're going to come back. I gotta ask what the I'm going to come back and ask Steve what it's like to deal with a junior version of Nancy Pelosi, Paul Ryan. We'll be right back. And I got Steve Pierce on, U.S. Representative, one of the truly conservative and independent thinkers in the House of Representatives, folks. And we will be right back. Got Steve Pierce here. All right, so Steve, what was it like to hear Paul Ryan state that people couldn't see the bill? It was in a secret room. You couldn't get a copy of it. As a matter of fact, you couldn't even bring a phone into this special room. Wasn't that like something out of 1984?
Yeah, trust me. I told him out in the West, we trust our neighbor, but we brand our cows, you know. And so I was just, you know, Paul has got that kind of character about him. I really like him. He is as smart a guy as there is in Congress. But in this thing, he was just totally wrong that we need to keep it hidden. And we've got to do this and this. And I said, Paul, I'm sorry, but I got four objections. I've mentioned them to the speaker staff. I've mentioned them to the whip. I've mentioned them to the deputy whip. And now you, and nobody's doing anything about it. I'm not going to change my vote. So anyway, that's the way it was.
And that vote is – so what was objectionable in that bill that they didn't want people to know about?
Oh, I don't know if it's objectionable. You really do when you're negotiating something with 10 or 12 different countries and you've got tax codes and things like that. You have maybe a preference because one country can offer a little bit more trade and, say, dairy items. You may give them an allowance that you don't in another country. So I understand that piece of it. But it's the unwillingness to let us as members of Congress have a voice. There are 8 different touch points in the negotiations where the president has to refer something to us, but there's no penalty if he doesn't. He can just walk through those 8. And all of them have the bias that says unless we disapprove, these points will be touched. The president will tell us that, okay, they reached this milestone, this one, 8 different times. And I said, well, just one of those 8 should be reverse polarity, that we should be assumed to disapprove unless we have a vote and we approve.
Yeah,
in other words,
good.
You
that's
see
good.
Where the bias is. It's yeah. So it's all
it's like the 10th Amendment almost.
Yes, and so he.
We have power unless you know.
Unless exactly, and so he never would give on that, and so the 34 of us. There were some of the 34 who wanted all 8. They wanted us to vote affirmatively on all 8. I've been in negotiations in my company and business, and that would be very. That would hamstring a negotiator, but one touch point where the American people, where we get to express the concerns of our district, and so that's just where I held the ground. Also, there was not much really prohibition on the countries that manipulate their currencies. China's at the top of the list, yeah. But a lot of countries do that, and so that they kept resisting strong language on that, and that New Mexico gets hurt pretty hard by that piece.
Yeah. So. This old idea of representative transparent government, is it dead?
No. It's just there are always forces that want to just either accomplish something for that group over there or the outside groups, and both parties have that. There are always those people who just want it to get done. You know, they want it to be real, the process to be more efficient. Well, I'm sorry. Getting an agreement with 51% of the population is a very difficult thing, and that causes us to move slow.
But I mean, people are absolutely mystified that Nancy Pelosi does this thing where she says, vote for the bill, then we'll find out what's in it, which is to me is a suicide mission.
Yes.
You can't have something good in a bill that has to be voted for before anybody knows what's in it.
You're exactly right.
Yeah, but they see Paul Ryan doing the same thing, and it just looks terrible. It makes people think that everybody in Washington is made out of the same substance.
Yeah, and that's the reason that that the 34 of us who stood up and voted against that procedural move, that was a big deal. And so that 34 got, I mean, we've got more attention over this one vote than anything I've done in 11 years. And that's appropriate that it should be. That says there is a big thing happening right now. It's a very big thing for the nation. The stakes are high, and I think you're going to see more people come to our position saying that we want transparency, we want people to know what we're doing up there, and we want to be speaking for the people. So I think it's going to strengthen, frankly. I just hear out here people insisting on it. And so when those
insisting
guys,
on what?
On voting our conscience and voting for a correct voting right.
What do you gain, in your opinion, when you compromise? I've seen Boehner compromise time and again. What did the Republicans or conservatives get out of these compromises?
Now, you have to think down on the ground level like I am. Mr. Boehner at his position, I'm not sure what his deal is. But if you're in my position, you gain a committee chairmanship or subcommittee chairmanship. You get inside more of the rooms where the discussions are going on, and you can impact this and that. I just told them that's not important enough to me to compromise principle. I said, I'm sorry.
All right. Here's what I think a lot of people who have any conservative intuition whatsoever look at somebody like John Boehner or Mitch McConnell, and they say, we understand it's a difficult situation. The president is obdurate. He's obstinate, very self-righteous. He doesn't like to communicate. But when we see you guys caught up in struggles over important things to us and you back down, we don't ever see that we've gotten anything for the compromise. And that's just, it's just, what is the point of calling yourself a member of the GOP if you're always going to back down and nothing is going to be gained?
Yeah, and that's a great question, and probably is the essential question since the elections last November. People, and I told Mr. Boehner the day after the election, he called and asked for my supportive speaker. I told him, sorry, I can't give it. I might do it, but I can't today. And so anyway, we had the discussion.
Did he start crying?
No, he was. But I did say that the election yesterday, sir, was not about us, not about you, not about Republicans. It was about a fear of where the president's taking the country, and people wanted us to be attention against that. They weren't really affirming us. They really don't like us much better today than they did yesterday, but they do like us better than the Democrats and Obama. But I said, we don't need to be going crazy up there with your ideas or anybody else's. We need to be this tension spring pulling it back towards
there
the middle.
Has to be two parties in opposition.
Yes. Yeah, that's correct. So what, I don't know what people get, just being inside the room, whatever. And
But I mean, it's just, you've got the president at a precipice. You've got him in a situation where something has gone wrong. The president is vulnerable. They don't ever see the GOP pressing the opportunity to get a win for the supporters.
A little bit is due to the fact that in the Senate, we don't have our head yet above water. In other words, we got the majority. But in the Senate, they work with the minority really having tremendous power.
Yeah.
And so Harry Reid says that he'll keep all 40, he'll keep 41 people voting not to bring stuff to the floor, and we literally can't take it to the floor.
I understand. So did he get pounded by the mafia? Is that the rumor in Washington?
It's a rumor, but I don't know. He looks tough, but I think he's going to step down at the end of the term. I don't think he's going to run again. I've heard plus and minus on that. Okay, but we are getting things done. The president has had to veto more legislation in this term than in the previous 6 years combined. We've gotten six or seven kind of key bills through. The sexual trafficking bill, he wasn't going to do anything on that. We're way ahead of our schedule on appropriation bills, and so things are grinding the way through the process. It's just hard.
Yeah. Okay. So, folks, we're at the break of the hour now. We're going to have Steve on the next hour for a certain period of time. If you have any questions, statements, or anything, feel free to call in 523-1450. 805-6180 is your text line. But what we're talking about here is something that's very, very, very important. We've got a new Washington control by both houses in the GOP, and yet the standard and the direction is still being led by the president. And what we'd like to do is see something for all of the blood, sweat, and tears that have been laid out there so far. I've got a call, but I've got to go to break right now, so we'll come back. We'll take that caller on the next hour. Kelly O'Connell, you're listening to AM Las Cruces 1450 KOBE, 523-1450 to call in. We'll be back after a break. It's Kelly. Hold on just a second.
Okay.
Who is this?
This is Kara. I just want your text line because I want to thank Steve Pierce for thinking, speaking, and following the legislative process because I'm surprised they didn't compliment him on his English, but that's great.
Yeah, he's right here.
Yeah, I'd like to thank him.
She's thanking you. So,
yes.
Yeah,
you can
thinking and
thanks.
Yes, thinking and speaking and following the legislative process, because in that branch of the government, that's the only place where the people, you can argue and discuss and make it work, and everybody's just pushing things through like they're zombies, eh? And it makes me sad because it's just sad. And thank you for speaking up and making Nancy Pelosi realize that she's not the control freak in charge, because there's issues. And I don't know why there's bipartisan. I just changed my partisanship for whatever I want to vote for. But thank you for speaking and thinking and making them in Washington, D.C. know that we are intelligent in New Mexico, eh?
Hey, you're making my day. Thanks.
Thanks a lot.
These are tough, dark days, I'll tell you. And you sit and, you know, got about 34 of us, so you got 400 that are kind of playing along, and they all act like you, you know, or didn't bathe when you come in the room. But I tell you, nothing's strong enough to make me break here. I don't.
Well,
think.
you were elected by the people of the state, and it's not a popularity contest. There, it's a let's make this work for everybody. Each contest, especially our state, but. Anyway, thanks a lot, because, right. Yeah, they need to be intelligent in Washington, D.C. They're just zombies in Armageddon, and I don't blame Barack Obama for not wanting to talk to anybody because nobody's got anything intelligent to say.
Garrett,
you know, maybe he'd like a little intelligence. Thanks
Garrett,
very much.
Thank you. Well, it's Kelly here, and I've got Steve Pierce, and what Steve and I agreed we'd do is start talking about the wild, wild world that we're living in right now and all the different things that he's got on his mind. In the meantime, though, I've got a clip from KOAT on a gunfight at a Motel 6 involving a former CNN anchor. Sounds unlikely, but here it is. And by the way, this is playing out nationally, so check it out. And I don't think I actually have that coming up over the. The system. Let me see here. Hold this on a second.
Yeah, here in New Mexico too.
Yeah. So what happened in this fight?
Well, looked like somebody came from outside, going to try to rob him. Looked sort of random. Just picked on somebody that had concealed carry.
And Tom, who's the assistant, what happened there?
27-year-old, apparently someone who jumped parole in Memphis, Tennessee, opened fire on Lynn Russell and her husband, both former employees of CNN. Both of those two have concealed carry permits. Her husband returned fire and killed the attacker.
What are the chances that a former mainstream media anchor would have a concealed carry permit?
Well, it's increasing. That's the deal. Is the country is coming our direction as conservatives. The country's moving our way. 10 years ago, 60% of the people felt like we needed more gun controls. Today, in a poll just released just about a month ago, 80% of households feel safer if they have a gun.
Yeah.
And so chances now, 8 out of 10, that very likely that you have a gun in your house.
Yeah.
And probably a concealed carry.
Well,
so.
And everybody remembers when Rosie O'Donnell went after Tom Selleck on gun rights, and it turns out that while she doesn't carry a gun, she hires a burly bodyguard who is loaded to the hilt.
I know. I always see the president keeps going in and saying we need to control guns, and they have the things on the internet. So let's have a gun-free zone around the president. You know, don't let his Secret Service have guns if you really want. If you believe in that.
Well, I mean, and they're saying they put a fence around the White House, and they posted this picture. They do know how to build a fence.
Oh yes,
yeah.
Yes.
So. the desire to survive does trump a lot of these ideological things, but there is this sense with the president that he's living in a bubble with all kinds of academic or isms. He's got a lot of theories, whether they're discredited or not. These are his vehicles to riding into his public policy, whether it's global warming, whether it seems to be socialism, anti-capitalism. You can run the gamut. The idea that the United States has to get in line internationally, all of these things are bringing us into danger. And now we see these things playing out across the nation and the world, the results of these policies. What's the feeling in speaking of all these different stories, what's the feeling in Washington, Steve?
Well, I think to an extent there's a detachment because people tend to be in silos. They manage in their committee of choice, and then the issues are limited. But when you stand back like the American people and you look across the spectrum, you see Greece in the process of failing. And by the way, we're in worse shape than Greece. And so Greece is in the position of failing. That comes straight into my committee. The IMF comes in and says that you all, America, should be bailing out Greece. I said, I'm sorry. People in my district make 31 to 35,000 a year average, something in that range. I'm not going to ask them to pay more taxes in order to bail out Greece, because Greece's problem comes from the fact that their people won't pay taxes. 40% of the people who fill out their tax returns just don't pay them. And so, and usually they're on the upper income. And so asking people in New Mexico to pay for the rich people in Greece that refuse to pay taxes, I don't think so.
Well, and I have a friend who's Greek, who's actually in Greece right now. And they said that they had asked the country had asked the politicians to give back enough money that they so they wouldn't have to be bailed out. Now, that is extraordinary.
Yeah, it's extraordinary, and the prime minister is saying that just vote for me and I'll negotiate something better. I'm sorry, but I think the German people are not willing. The German politicians have been willing to bail Greece out, whatever they have to go, this idea of keeping the European Union together. But the German people are saying we've had enough.
You know, they're on the hook for $150 billion. The Germans are if they fail.
I understand, and it's going to get worse. And so they're now asking us. German parliament members have come over and asked us. And I said, I'm sorry, I disagree with that. I'm not going to ask people in New Mexico that work hard every day trying to make their keep their head above water to pay for people that don't.
Question, Steve, aren't we living in an age when everything like this is too big to fail, that somebody is bigger as upstream?
Yeah, and we're going to find that that too big to fail policy is simply incoherent because things are in the process of failing. This socialist system around the world is failing.
And now they say there is no more room, there's no more liquidity to bail out a future recession because we are so committed to what you're saying is socialism. What it is, folks, is it's Keynesianism. It is reverse socialism. We're printing extra money and spending it. We're providing the money up front, trying to recollect it in taxes. We're deficit spending. It is causing insolvency across the globe.
It is causing insolvency and puts our currency at great risk because we are doing it. If you're watching carefully, China is beginning to buy gold. And they're saying they're going to issue a currency to trade in internationally that will be backed by gold. And so this whole idea that money is just an imaginary thing is going to be replaced soon by the Chinese. And when we lose our status as world's reserve currency is when the problems all come home to roost.
Yeah.
Right now, all the nations in the world trade in U.S. dollars. And so when we print money, we get to export that inflated money. And it's all divided up 180 different ways. But when we no longer get to export that inflation, it all comes home immediately that day. And so if you want to know when the crisis for America comes, it's that one-term reserve world currency.